Hello, I'm T.S. Wright, founder and president of the God Center Concept and host of the Kingdom Crossroads podcast. Our mission is clear. We are here to help spark a great harvest, a revival, if you will, across the United States. That's why we are launching the 2540 campaign. Over the next 40 days, we're going to ask people to join us, just like you, and to give a one-time tax-deductible gift of $25 and partnering us with this mission, and then sharing this vision with other people so we can expand our reach in powerful ways. God is calling us to work, and together we can see lives transformed and hearts awaken. You can simply scan this QR code or go to www.godcenteredconcept.com to make this one-time gift to our ministry. Thank you for being a part of this community. Your prayers and your support mean more than you will ever know. May God bless you in all that He calls you to do. And as we always say here, now go forth in total surrender to the one who owns and reigns over all creation, and let the great harvest begin. Welcome to the show that combines biblical truth with the purpose of sparking revival. Committed to spreading the gospel, this is your Kingdom Crossroads podcast. And now, your host, T.S. Wright. Welcome, everyone, to today's show. Part of the Kingdom Crossroads community that you got. I'm so glad that you guys are joining us. And you are also being included on the God Center Concept TV show today. And back with us is a guy that we have had on the show before. You have seen him before, and we want to welcome back Joshua Spatha. Joshua, it is great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. Just so you guys remember, he has written a book called Mere Spirituality, and it's been not quite, but almost a month since he's released that book. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you have not purchased that book, you need to get your hands on this book. So I've already have a copy myself. I've already looked at it. I've read through some of it with even the limited time I've had. And I'm telling you, you're not going to be able to put it down. So make sure that you get out and get his book. So anyway, without further ado, we're going to start in here. We're going to be talking today. Our focal point is really going to be crossing that line into some apologetics and some really interesting ways of looking at Christianity, because one of the things that we have to realize is that every culture has a different mindset when approaching their Judeo-Christian roots. And in Western society, we definitely have a mindset, and Joshua is going to lead us through that today. So without further ado, Joshua, here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to ask you this question. Kind of give us some understanding of the Western mindset of Western civilization and the approach to Christianity that we have, and kind of give us a flavor of what it is we need to kind of help us to absorb it in the way that it is meant to be absorbed.
Yeah. Let me first kind of cover how we absorb it.
Sure.
And then we'll get to maybe how we should be absorbing it.
All right.
Because definitely in the Western world, we pride ourselves on our, you know, Greek philosophical heritage, where we claim at least to be very rational, you know, logical, scientifically minded, individuals, and as kind of a culture and society. Now, recently that facade that we've kind of built, around us, has taken a beating, as our culture kind of strays further and further into relativistic truth claims. And so even science itself, the laws of logic and rationality have kind of been questioned in our culture, as of late, because people are getting uncomfortable with even the concept of, absolute truth as a whole. And without an absolute truth, principles don't work across the board, because you may think of something from a particular point of view, and that may be just as, you know, accurate as someone from a completely different point of view. So without an absolute truth framework, which we all agree upon and therefore all can have conversation, debate, discussion to come to, you know, the core of that truth, as Socrates, you know, definitely the Socratic method, you know, implores us to question and dialogue so that we can get closer to truth. That entire concept is now being questioned, if that is even possible, because your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth, and even though they are radically different claims, they can both be true simultaneously. The foundation that our entire civilization has been built upon is starting to show some cracks. We'll see if we continue with the pickaxe and destroy that foundation and watch our civilization crumble around us as a result, or if we, regain some sanity and go back to that absolute foundation. But the vast majority, though right now we're having kind of a cultural crisis, even an identity crisis, definitely if you look back in history, the vast majority of Western civilization has kind of hung its hat on that foundation, if you will, that we're rational, we're logical, we can have discourse and discussion, and through debate, you know, we can kind of come to a better understanding of what is true. And through that, we have really gone in a direction of kind of hyper-rationality, if you will, or kind of leaning into science and the scientific method, which was, you know, first put forth by Sir Francis Bacon. There's a long history, a long tradition within our culture of this. And what is interesting about that is that during the Enlightenment and then the following age, the Victorian age, we started to feel this tension between rationality, logic, and faith and religion, as if they were opposed to each other rather than two faces of the same coin that were necessary in order for the other to function. Many have made the case quite compellingly that, you know, our modern sciences, like all of the forefathers of each of those fields, were Christians. They were people who believed in God, who believed that we could even discover truths about God and make sense of the world around us precisely because he created us with a brain that, you know, closely mirrored his own mind, and therefore we could understand him and understand his creation. And so we started off on that solid footing, but then as time, you know, waxed on, we got to this point where we were feeling that there was a tension or a mutual exclusivity to each claim of either the science and rational side or the spiritual or religious side. And I do tackle that in the opening chapter of my book, in just validating that both sides of that spectrum are valid, are essential, really, for us to function. But cultures and individuals have a tendency to lean heavily into one side of that spectrum or the other, and then kind of due to pride and arrogance, we will justify our own position as being the best, obviously, and people who are on the other side of that spectrum as being, you know, idiots not fit, you know, for polite society or whatever the case may be. We demonize what is different than ourselves, obviously. And so what's interesting is that is the context that we're obviously in right now, from the Enlightenment to the Victorian age to the modern age. Like, that tension between faith and reason or science and religion has not dissipated at all. It is still very much on full display. And so what that has done has kind of sold a lie to the church that it's one or the other. And if you find yourself in the religion camp, then that makes you a science denier, you know? And so we really have to understand that that is a false dichotomy. Like, this is not an either or situation. Both and is not only possible, but it's beneficial, like to be able to have a more holistic view of reality around us. But given that that is the environment that we find ourselves in, it is absolutely critical for believers within that cultural context to be able to engage with people on a rational, logical, scientific, and evidential basis so that we can actually connect with people and give an account for the faith that we have and be good witnesses in the cultural context that we're in.
Yes, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to take a couple of steps back to something he said. If you have never listened to the podcast side of this, and you may be here on the TV show, I actually take you step by step through the seven ages of the church. And I actually tell you that the last age of the church starts in the 1830s. And why? It actually is pointing to what he is saying, is that what happened was, is we started to really industrialize. And we had this mass explosion, and we had already had the Enlightenment. But what was happening now is that more and more people were starting to think in this technical kind of linear way. And this technical linear way actually stomped out the Second Great Awakening. And all of a sudden, society explodes with, you have mass transportation, mass communication at levels no one had ever seen at that point. And what it does is it completely changes the way people saw life. If you lived in the, and I'm going to say this, if you lived in the United States in the 1820s and then you lived in the 1840s, it was completely different. It was like this massive change. All of a sudden you could get to places through on the railroad. You could get messages really quick. You had the telegraph. I mean, the Civil War wasn't very far after that. And right in 1860, 1861 is that rough area when it starts, they're able to actually conduct the war from a situation room because of the telegraph. And think of those modern technologies as how it has shaped our thinking. And exactly what he's talking about, this is all happening, all right, starting in those 1830s, and it just keeps progressing to the point that we not only physically are so reliant on technology, but our mindset is reliant on it. And what it's done is it's made us like everything has to be in this perfect scientific thing, and it has to be physically where I can handle it and hold it and make it like it's some material thing for me to believe it. And it's almost like we have take rationalization to this nth degree, and it has really made it hard for a lot of people in our society to really embrace faith. And so they think it's something opposite, because if it's not that tangible linear thing that I can grab onto, then and faith isn't always, guess what? Then they think, well, it's not real. And it puts people in that mindset. And that is what has happened a lot in Western society. And it's exactly what he said. You know, it seems now that the technology changes so fast that it's like, what's a truth today doesn't feel like a truth tomorrow. There's a different truth, you know, and those truths are just changing and they're interchanging all the time. Well, that's not what faith is based on. Faith is based on an absolute truth. The biblical text gives us the foundation of that. It is the foundation of truth. And Jesus Christ is the centerpiece of all of this. And I mean, he says it in Matthew chapter 24, verse 35, heaven and earth will pass away. That means all these things that you hold tangible on are going to go away, but my words will never pass away. That means his word is perfect truth. It is the only foundation that you know is for sure, that is solid and that's not going to change, even if the earth disappears, even if the heavens are crumbled and reshaped, Jesus' words will stay the same. And so I, when you said all that, that just hit me in that way. So, and I think that that's such an important thing that we have to, that we have to be ready to understand that in our faith, we have to cling to the truth of Christ and his words. So I want to throw this out there for him, for you. And you've talked about, you know, our ways of thinking and the things that are difficult in Western society sometimes when we're intermingling faith, and it seems like there's this science over here and faith over here. You know, they're like these two separate things. Talk about how, you know, with the approach of being evidentiary is probably a good word to use here. You know, how can we approach people who don't believe? You know, what's really a good way for us to approach that in this type of thinking? And I know you deal with this, so I'm just going to let you take it away from there.
Yeah, we get hung up on, like you said, the tangibility of things. But I think we've so focused on the tangible that we almost forget how mysterious even the tangible is. Yeah. Like, we don't understand reality around us, even the physical aspects to their full degree, let alone, you know, things beyond that. And so I think some humility is in order. I think a lot of times we come at the question with just an assumption that we understand the reality around us. And the truth is that reality itself is so difficult for us to explain. Whether you're coming at it from the quantum, you know, physics side of the equation, and like, what is matter? How does it interact? What is it constituted of? You know, we zoom in and we realize that what we think is solid and tangible actually is made more of empty space, than actual particles. Like, that's, it just starts to, like, the more you study even the physical universe, the more it kind of melts your brain, and you're wondering, like, okay, what is reality? To the extent, like, okay, just giving you an example, we joke around about the physical reality, and that accepting anything outside of the physical reality requires faith. Like, it's a bit too much to ask, because I can't touch it, I can't smell it, I can't feel it, I can't measure it. There's not a tangible quality to it. Therefore, it must not be real. But there's so many aspects and elements of human existence that clearly do not fit into that category. Abstract thought does not fit into a tangible box that we can measure or that we can, touch and feel. But then you have to understand that there's a whole nother group on the exact opposite side of the spectrum. When you're talking about worldviews like Buddhism, a religious worldview, they believe the exact opposite, that it's the spiritual realm that's actually the real reality, and it's the physical realm that is the illusion. Yep. This doesn't actually exist. We're all deceived into thinking it exists. We all are in this dream state. We need to wake up and snap out of it. And that sounds absurd to us, but there's even philosophies within Western society that believe a very similar conclusion. Things like game theory, the popular movie back in the day, The Matrix, you know, kind of drew on these frameworks, thinking that the reality that we do actually taste, touch, smell, feel, and measure isn't reality, that it is an illusion. And there was, I forget his name now, I'd have to look it up, but there was an old Catholic scholar, I think it was back in the 12th century, I'd have to look this up, but I just recently stumbled upon a quote of his that just really kind of put a fine point on this. And the quote is long, and I'll butcher it, but I'll just give kind of the summary of the thought. He said, what we interact with on a daily basis, we have to realize is just an interpretation of reality by our mind. Yeah. It's not actual reality. What I touch, like, how do I know what I'm touching is actually what the small electrical impulses going through my nervous system up to my brain, and then my brain has to make a picture based on those electrical impulses and has to put little pieces of information together and create a model abstractly in our mind of what the reality that we're actually encountering looks like. Because the mind can't directly perceive it. It has to interpret through different senses what a model of that reality might look like. Well, we do the same thing with the spiritual reality. So claiming that we can't directly measure or directly touch spiritual reality doesn't mean it's any less real. It just means we have to invoke different senses in order to come up with a model in our mind of what that reality looks like. But that's actually no different than what we do with the physical world. And so they're on equal footing, as kind of counterintuitive as that might sound. They're on equal footing. They are both very mysterious realms that our mind is trying to grapple with and make sense of and find its place in the middle of all of that. And so as we engage, we have to understand we know nothing. Yeah. First and foremost, humility is a great place to start, but then moving on to, okay, but if there is a spiritual reality that does precede the physical, because what can produce matter, space, and time other than something that is immaterial, spaceless, and timeless? So we already can understand kind of the ground zero of what could produce the physical has to be something non-physical. If we understand that reality, then we have to understand that there is a mind associated with that. There is a greater intelligence than my own. There is an eyewitness who was there when each of these things occurred. And therefore, his testimony is more reliable than mine or my professor's or this, you know, philosopher over here or this theologian over there. And so just coming to this place of openness and realizing, okay, if there is a spiritual realm, there is a God, there is a supreme intelligence and power who, according to the Judeo-Christian tradition, actually loves us and is trying to contact us. And that is the uniqueness of the Judeo-Christian worldview is all these other religions, if they acknowledge a spiritual reality and you know, gods or a god, they are all trying to work their way to them.
Yes.
Christianity is the only one that flips that upside down and says, no, there's nothing that you can do to earn that favor. There's nothing that you can do to earn righteousness or get back in that deity's good graces. We have fallen, and it's only by his grace that he comes, and he has loved us so much. He died for us. He entered into our reality of death, pain, and suffering, paid that price for us, and is calling us into relationship. Like, he did it for us rather than us trying to work our way back to him. And so there is this opportunity to engage with God on his terms, but his terms are way better than anything that we have concocted to try to earn our way back. But in that text where God is revealed as love and he gives his morals, his ethics, his definitions of righteousness, like that is something that we can stand firmly on because it's not subjective. It's not this opinion or that opinion or this cultural understanding that we've developed today that is so fickle, it changes in 5 minutes, you know. It is the same yesterday, today, and forever because the being who dictated it is outside of time. And so it is something that we can stand firm on, and that can be uncomfortable because something that stands firm, by definition, will at times be in line with cultural definitions and, you know, the spirit of the age, and it will be culturally convenient to align with that truth. But there will be other times when it is countercultural and extremely uncomfortable and embarrassing to align with that truth because it is so different than what the culture in that season believes.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, if you guys that are listening to this, take what Joshua is saying here, because we are living in a society that is just shifting sands all the time. I mean, it seems like we can't even get through 1 year without truths changing anymore. It's the growth of technology and stuff is just exponential. And so what he's trying to do is to establish for you guys that there is a foundation that no matter what happens in society, that we can rely on, both in the physical and in the spiritual realm. God has given that to you, and he is beyond time. He is beyond all things. I mean, think about it. Everything was created by him and for him. And so any of these physical things, any of these, quote, truths, any of these things, we have to always go back to the foundation that is Christ. He is the only foundation that will always be solid for us, no matter what the culture says, no matter what wherever that pendulum is swinging, it does not matter. Christ is the only foundation that we get, and he's the only one that will last through all cultures and beyond time. And I think that's maybe a way for you guys to absorb that today. And I hate this that we're out of time, but Joshua, I thank you for being on the show, and we definitely look forward to having you back and certainly talking about some of these other things. And I'm just going to say this. Thank you for being a part of this, and thank you for being a part of our community. And you guys have a blessed, blessed day.
Thank you for tuning in to hear today's message. We would now like to invite you to partner with us in our ministry by going to our website or simply scanning the QR code on the screen. The focus of our ministry is to spread the gospel and to spark a revival, a great harvest, if you will. On our website, you will see our Kingdom Crossroads podcast, as well as the other ministries that we have. We ask that you pray for our ministry and consider partnering with us by giving a contribution to help support the advancement of the gospel and our ministry. Whether you are a new believer or have been following Christ for a while, consider our discipleship program, the God Center Concept. This fall, we'll be offering online courses each week to support believers into becoming true followers of Jesus. Also, if you tune into our podcast, you will have the privilege of listening to not only myself, but to a whole host of other Christians that we interview. Thank you so much for being a part of our ministry, and we look forward to seeing you again next week. On behalf of our staff here at the God Center Concept, I am T.S. Wright signing out. Now go forth in total surrender to the one who owns and reigns over all creation, and let the great harvest begin.